From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Samantha Wright, filling in for Jim and Godette. It's Idaho Matters. Here in Idaho, collaboration is a big part of not just protecting public lands, but solving natural resource issues, wilderness designation, restoration, and protection issues from the Owyhees to the Panhandle. And these collaborative efforts are being used as a model to help resolve other natural resource problems facing the West. Joining us today to talk more about all this is John Robison, the Public Lands Director for the Idaho Conservation League. Welcome to the show, John.
Thank you so much, Samantha. It's great to be here.
So talk about what you're going to talk about at this upcoming, you're going to give a presentation at the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute. What's on the agenda? You're going to talk about collaborative efforts.
That's right. And folks might not know about it, given all the news about how divided people are these days. But Idahoans actually have a reputation across the West for coming together to create enduring collaborative solutions. In fact, sometimes this is even called the Idaho Way. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that, some of the successes, some of the challenges of that. But really, it all comes back to the fact that we have so much public land in Idaho and how everyone, regardless of their perspective, values their public lands. And so that's really our common ground. And that gives us a head start on solving problems.
Well, it does. The first thing that comes to mind is, just some of the things that we've managed to accomplish here with wilderness areas and just by collaborating, getting people together, getting different groups all at the same table.
No, that's right. And it's been quite a journey for us. And usually what brings folks together is, a passion for public lands. And so this is something where just think about, shared values like clean water, open space, abundant fish and wildlife, healthy communities. Think of like skiing at Bogus Basin or, camping and fishing in the Sawtooths or, hiking or hunting in McCall in the fall and whitewater rafting and all these great things in public lands. And when people come together, regardless of their agendas and their interests are, we have this in common. And so this is a great starting point for discussions. And so I want to talk a little bit more about that and really highlight how I think this is a growing trend, and we need to keep doing that if we're going to solve our public lands issues.
Well, yeah. And one of the best examples that comes to my mind is the White Clouds, Boulder White Clouds.
Absolutely.
Talk about that and how that happened.
Right. So this was one where we were able, and it was actually through the leadership of Congressman Mike Simpson, who created a forum or a venue for folks to come together. And of course, we had wilderness advocates for motorized recreation, county issues, private property folks, hunters, outfitters. And we realized that even though we might have some debates about where a line should be drawn on a map or what designation should be there, we eventually realized that we had a lot more in common than we thought, and that when at the end of the day, we all wanted the landscape protected. And instead of having a kind of a one-size-fits-all approach, Congressman Simpson was able to bring folks together, figure out what worked, and it wasn't a solution that anyone themselves would have brought together, but by and large, it protected the landscape and it protected our quality of life in that area. So that was a defining moment and a point of pride for Idahoans.
Well, and ended up creating three new wilderness areas in Idaho, leading to some protections and some understandings about use of the Boulder White Cloud area. And this all was put together, signed in 2015, but it took years of Congressman Simpson and others working collaboratively to make this happen. I remember back when this first began, and there was a lot of skepticism by some that it would ever come to pass. But I think perseverance and as you're talking about, collaboration are the key.
That's exactly right. And it was the same thing with the Owyhee Canyon lands, where for decades the BLM was high centered about wilderness and access management and range management issues, and no one was able to make progress at any side. But back in 2001, with the support of Owyhee County, the Owyhee Initiative was formed to bring a very diverse set of stakeholders together, but they were all connected to the landscape their own way. And what really was instrumental was everyone was willing to kind of move past the bumper sticker slogans, drop the political posturing, and take an interest and find out what everyone really cared about. And just like with the Boulder White Clouds, we had a lot more co in common than we thought. So I was lucky enough to be part of that group. And when you're standing, in the Owyhees, when you're driving through hours and hours of sagebrush, kind of the sagebrush sea, and all of a sudden you come across this canyon that drops hundreds of feet. And right there, you're standing at the edge, and you might see a golden eagle soaring beneath you, a herd of bighorn sheep on the other side, or even petroglyphs of these same animals from hundreds of years earlier. And it doesn't matter if you're a rancher, a kayaker, outfitter, dirt biker. You're going to experience awe and wonder. And so that's really what brought us together, was to try to figure out how to preserve this with certainty for everyone and flexibility, and how to best pass this incredible gift on to others. And it really, everyone learned a lot in that whole process.
Well, and I love that that folks who may not think they have anything in common can get together, find out what they do have in common, and protect something that they all love, whether they may love it in different ways and in different aspects, but they still love the Owyhee Canyon lands or the Boulder White Clouds.
Right. And that was where we were able to move beyond, I think, what the BLM and the federal government had just been high centered on for so long. And we were able to come up with a proposal, as with the Boulder White Clouds, where we were able to craft a solution that recognized local concerns while also acknowledging the national significance of the landscape and of the multiple uses out there and of the wilderness. And so it's a much better tool than waiting for some type of mandate coming down from a one size fits all from somewhere back in DC that you may or may not agree on. And chances are the pendulum might swing the other way. So having a collaborative solution really provided a lot of certainty, and it makes sure that our our vision for the landscape can get very carried forward.
We're speaking with John Robison about collaboration in Idaho, especially when it comes to public lands. And you're going to be talking to the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute at Boise State next week. You're also going to be talking about Idaho's national forests, all the way to the Panhandle, and some collaborative issues there. Talk about that.
That's right. So another thing that brings us together is, of course, we love our forests, these massive ponderosa pines and our wildlife valleys back there. And it's a part of a rural economy. But we have a real need to protect and restore our forests, particularly in the eroded front country. And so this is bringing another set of collaboration of folks together. Loggers, conservationists, recreationists, private property owners, county officials, state and federal government working together like I've never seen before. And the foundation of this is that, people and rural communities are part of the ecosystem and need to be part of the solution. So the first forest collaborative I worked back on was back in 2006 on the Hughes Creek project on the Salmon Chalice National Forest. It's about 5 miles north of the community of North Fork. And in that project, instead of fighting over old growth logging and things like that that were really divisive, we came together and noticed that there's a forest health problem. We had unnaturally dense small and medium trees. We had that posed a threat to the remaining large old growth trees. And so we decided to thin out the unnaturally dense trees and to run a prescribed fire through the area to reduce the hazardous fuels. And we really were put to the test, because just a few years later, the Mustang Wildfire Complex roared into the project area. But it hit the shaded fuel break where the Forest Service had thinned out the undergrowth. The fire dropped down to the ground and actually burned around the bases of the large ponderous pines instead of in the canopy. And ultimately, the fire crews were able to redirect the fire away from Highway 93 corridor and the Lost Trail ski area. And so it was an amazing success. The goal wasn't to fireproof the forest, but to manage the forest and the watershed so the fire could play its natural role. Now, that's just one example, but we have this work is needed all across the state in our roaded front countries next to communities, because wildfires don't recognize private property boundaries. So we now have about 10 different forest restoration collaboratives, one in each forest, that's actually getting folks together and trying to figure out how to restore our forests, our watersheds, wildlife habitat, address recreation issues. And so when we're getting support from the state and the federal government, and it's really Idaho has become a real leader in this shared stewardship approach.
Well, this sounds like a great model for elsewhere. Can I just say, you said 10 of these? That's right.
There are 10. Pretty much every national forest has a forest restoration collaborative. And we started with kind of bite-sized projects, and now we're trying to gear up toward more landscape-level projects that, again, try to prioritize these higher-risk fire sheds and where communities are at risk, and also doing so in a way that protects wildlife habitat and these old-growth trees. And the beneficiaries are really folks who, you know, live and work in these rural communities who really value the woods, but want it managed well and want to be good stewards of the landscape. So this is bringing new tools to the table. In fact, one of the funding sources is a requisite for that, a requirement for that, is dependent on having a local forest collaborative on the ground to help inform the project.
That's a lot of not just collaboration, but coordination and dedication to get all of those projects up and running and all those people together. You're doing a lot there.
You know, it is very much a team effort. And, you know, at the Idaho Conservation League, you know, we bring one perspective to the table, and that's an important part. But we learn from others all the time, and you really need everyone's got a unique and valuable perspective. And so you really need to hear from the private property owners, the county officials, the recreationists in the area, folks who have a history of that landscape and what worked and what didn't work in the past. And so what we're finding is these are folks that would never normally get in a room together. But getting together, we actually, thinking of having a greater appreciation for each other's perspectives. And that's been key.
Wow. And we mentioned this sort of thing could be a model for other places.
It is. And actually there's other collaboratives in other states that are doing their own thing. And we actually, I'm with a group called the Idaho Forest Restoration Partnership, and we're trying to support other collaborative efforts as they come up through Idaho, and just help connect them and make sure that they can learn from each other. Because, I think that we really, this is the collaboratives really seem to be the best solution for these long-standing land management issues, because it brings everyone together and lets their voices be heard in the management of their lands. And so it's been a real privilege for me to be part of these.
Well, and as you said, you know, if all the folks don't have buy-in, it's just not going to work.
No. And collaboration, you know, you really have to focus on this zone of agreement. So that's where it takes a lot of time and trust. And it's certainly not the most efficient way to go about things sometimes. But when you do get high-centered and it's an impasse and no one's getting anything, I think that's when people really figure out, well, maybe I should actually, you know, call that person, have a cup of coffee. It may end up being 1,000 cups of coffee, but figure out where they're coming from and where that zone of agreement is. You're not going to agree on everything. You know, you have to pick your battles. But when you do find areas you can agree on, and you're coming from very different perspectives, that has a lot of impact for decision makers. And so that's been the value of it's not just the conservation groups coming to the table, but when you have forest products industry, recreational groups, counties, private property owners all coming together, well, that really is the best way to, I think, make changes or recommendations on the landscape, and to make sure that they are endurable solutions that actually stand the test of time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We've been speaking with John Robison, the Public Lands Director for the Idaho Conservation League, about collaboration in Idaho. John will be talking more about the collaboration next Tuesday at the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute at Boise State. Thanks for coming on, telling us a little bit about it.
Thanks so much. And I just really appreciate everyone who's out there recreating on public lands and enjoying them and being good stewards for them. So thank you.
Thanks for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Samantha Wright. We'll see you tomorrow.
What if the greatest tragedy of your life was just covered up?
I have never seen anything like that before or after.
This is the story of the worst marine-on-marine friendly fire in modern history, a story kept from the public.
It's like, what did y'all have to hide?
Listen to NPR's Embedded podcast in its latest series, Taking Cover.